Welcome to the Fight Life Podcast. I'm John Barbin, and with me, as always, is Brad Pilon. And I don't even know what today's topic is. Brad emailed me earlier today with some interesting ideas. He's in, where are you, Disney World? Orlando?
No, man, I'm in Kissimmee. Kissimmee, just outside of Orlando at the Westgate Vacation Villas, kind of doing a family getaway for the week. We did Epcot. Might do a couple more activities, but mostly it's just swimming in the pool and laying by the sun, which is a nice change from what we've got up there.
All right, well, hit me.
All right, so, okay, basically what I realized, I've been just paying attention to what goes on down here. And, you know, you and I, we talk to a lot of people who are obviously American or live in the States, so we don't really get a chance to really get down here and just sort of chill, right? It's not something we get to do very often. So I was down here, and I noticed that on the radio, they were talking about the First Lady, Michelle Obama, and her plan to kind of combat obesity. And, the point of this call obviously isn't to weigh in on political issues, and, you know, obviously John and I really don't care about what your opinion may or may not be of Michelle Obama, but the point is that I saw this as a chance to kind of point out what's happened whenever government gets involved in weight loss, which is a massive fail. Right? It never really works, at least in North America. And I think the reason is, and John, something you and I have experienced in the, you know, what is the supplement industry, just even with our ideas, is when ideas by committee, they always fail. Right? Because probably, I mean, to me, Michelle Obama seems like a smart lady. So she's probably looked around and she's like, hey, we need to tell the population, you've got to stop eating so much and you've got to stop eating now. Which, I mean, would be advice both you and I would agree with, right? Like, you definitely have to slow down. We cannot be eating this much food. The problem is, it'll be a committee that will say, you know, instead of saying that, you know, because it's a little harsh, what we should say is, you know, you need to eat a little less, right? And then from there, through committee, it'll become, you know, we don't like the eat less message. What we think is you should make healthy food choices. And then, of course, now the weight loss message is gone. It has turned into a healthy food choices message, which is interesting because I was looking at a box of Cheerios today I bought down in the States. And then people who don't know, the United States has different laws and regulations about what they can and can't say on their food as compared to Canada. And John, you'd love this. On the box of Cheerios, it says research shows that eating, this is where the capital letters come in, eating capital letters more grain can help with weight loss. The irony, of course, is that you're in the word more, right?
Yeah, totally. Like And that's for every regulation, that always happens. It always gets spun into buying more product.
Exactly. So you're never, ever, as a population, going to see a government, you know, or even just, because I know everybody hates it when we talk about government getting involved in things, but you're never going to see a wide acceptance of the advice to simply eat less. It's actually never going to happen.
Yeah,
it'd be really cool. Go ahead.
Well, it's not an economically feasible marketing message for anybody. So
exactly.
So no matter who it is and where, if there's, unless it's purely free advice or you're learning it, I don't even know where you'd. I mean, besides you and me, I don't know anybody else who just says less. And I mean, you can find it in research studies, but even then, it's. There's very little research funding for that sort of thing either, because who's going to be funding that kind of, you know, a certain amount of research funding comes from government grants, but a good chunk of it comes from various industries like the dairy industry, the egg and poultry industry, then the cattleman's beef, and then the grain industry. All of those industries are going to fund research to come up with the initial bias is how does more of my product help with weight loss? It's never going to be how does less of my product help with weight loss.
Right. So here, now this is my tie-in, perfect segue into Epcot, right? So at Epcot, we mostly I just went there to do the around the world part and eat food from every country. That was really my goal. But we did stop in on the stuff that was knowing something about land. It was something to do with the future of food. And they've done some really cool stuff. Cool in terms of my opinion, maybe not everybody's, but genetic variations on plants where you can actually grow plants would typically be grown underground, grown on trees, like sweet potatoes, grown on trees, above ground. 9-pound lemons, things like that, right? They're also investigating edible tropical fruits, and that's what you might find in the rainforest or other areas where they're, you know, they're growing in difficult soil, difficult terrain, and they're coming up with all these new and innovative ways to feed us, which I thought was really, really cool. You know, immediately what sprung to my head was they're going to get to the point where you have a tree in your kitchen that every morning grows breakfast for you, and you eat the breakfast, and next morning breakfast is there again, right? It's getting to that level.
A bacon and eggs tree, that's amazing. And then like a pancake tree right next to it. That would be amazing.
Oh, I would own a crop of pancakes.
Oh yeah, totally. I'd be in my pancake tree orchard.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. But then the interesting thing about, so they talk a lot about how it was, you know, Epcot research scientists and the USDA working together on this. Except when I left, and on the sign on the way out, something they never mentioned was that the whole thing's sponsored by Nestle. Right? Because even when you're trying to find a good solution, what you actually want to do as a corporation is find a good solution first so you can sell it. So again, it'll never be less. Never, right? Because less isn't profitable.
First to market always wins. That's just a kind of a general rule of economics. You don't even need to patent anything as long as you're first to market.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
It was just a very interesting time being down here. And I think that another thing I want to point out is we've sort of talked about how, you know, you're never going to see populational advice of just eat less. Like, as much as I would love, you know, eat that pizza to be the Canadian diet and Canadians being known for beer, hockey, and fasting once or twice a week, it's never going to happen, right? Even if I could get a meeting with the, you know, whoever the director of health is for Canada, it would, through committee, always be filtered out. The message would never, ever be eat less.
Mm, no.
Oh, but the thing is, go ahead.
Well, this ties into a really interesting story. I went for a checkup today, and then a friend of mine, she just went for her checkup, and she's dieting down, just trying to lose a bit of weight, and she's trying to zero in on her Venus index. So I gave her her ideal numbers for her height, and she's got her ideal shoulders, her ideal hips, and she's 1 inch away from her ideal waist. And we figured out she's probably, 3 or 4 pounds away. So she just wants to lose 3 or 4 more pounds, and then she's like, we'll be happy at that size. She's not big in the size she is now. And so she goes. Oh no, not at all. She's 115 now. She's looking to be 111-ish, and at 5'1", that's about right for her size. And she's got a lot of muscle mass. She can run 10K in about 50 minutes. So her cardiovascular shape is fantastic. I mean, every way you can measure her, she's elite athlete level, healthy and in shape. And then the nurse asked her, gives her a bunch of questions. And one of them is like, are you looking to gain or lose weight? She's like, oh, I want to lose a couple more pounds. And then the nurse proceeded to give her a lecture about weight loss is, you know, she's fine the way she is. She should be happy with her size. Started handing her pamphlets about being okay with her like body image and stuff. And it started, you know, giving her a little mini lecture on, you know, weight training and exercise can be addictive and it can become a problem. Like, are you kidding me? All of this stuff was coming from a nurse who was about 50 pounds overweight.
Of course. And that's a great segue to what I was about to explain is what I've seen down here by visiting Epcot, by being at a resort, by being, you know, a stone throw from Disney, has made me realize that we were being massively lied to by 1% of 1% of 1% of the population. So I can't do the math in my head, but just think about how small, infinitesimally small that number is. 1% of a percent of a percent of the population. And the way I came up with this is really simple, is from various websites, I believe the population of the United States of America is somewhere in the range of 310 million, right?
Mm-hmm.
That I lumped in Canada, which is just, you know, we're upwards of 30 million now, closing in on 35 or 37, depending on who you ask. So if you take the number 350 million and just tease that down to percentages, because that's the actual population. That's everybody that's, you know, on this continent of just counting USA and Canada. But when you think of the bodies you see and the people you see that have the ideal bodies, the bodies you think of, there are – how many teams in the NFL, John?
32 or something like that.
And their active roster is, what, 50 people? Per team?
Between 55 active, like 85, I think, total.
Yeah. And then in the NHL, which is hockey, which is really only, you know, a small fraction of Americans may watch it, but there's only 20 people per team, in even less number of teams, same with NBA.
NBA's got 12.
Exactly. You take all these athletes, right, and you think that, well, you probably don't know a lot of positions. Some positions in football don't have ideal physiques, right? And you boil it down, you realize, you know, if I gave you a pen and paper in a couple hours to list out every professional athlete you know who has, like, one of those, like, a typical athlete's body, even including some Olympic athletes or maybe soccer players, something I didn't know, you might get to 100. You might. I'm massive incentive. I'm letting you cheat and call a couple of your friends. You might be able to list off 100 people who you've seen in the news or media in the last 6 months. Okay, so that's sport athletes. Now, let's think about Hollywood celebrities and TV people, right? The truth is, there just aren't that many of them, especially those that are popular in the news right now. So we're going to be really generous and say that there's 100 of them, right? 100 actors and actresses combined who are regularly appearing in whichever magazines update you on those type of people. I don't even know, what is it, Us Magazine or whatever it is that shows the best bodies, et cetera. It's typically a group of 100 people. Then you have the fitness world. And this is something John and I know for sure, is that if you pick, you know, a cross-section of all the fitness magazines, like bodybuilding magazines or Shape or Oxygen, guys, girls, whatever, it's the same models over and over again, right? Pumping the same products, or one, he's pumping a protein shake in one and, you know, workout shoes in the other. But it's a very small knit group. So let's give them 50, right? And then let's think of maybe some of the people you know who are in your life who are in shape. And then let's count, John, everybody who's actually involved in online marketing of fitness and, like, direct TV marketing of fitness, and maybe another 100. So 350 people that we constantly have being flashed in front of us, 350 bodies that are in shape.
Out of 350 million.
Yeah. So a percent of a percent of a percent of the population. But if that's all you ever see, and John, you and I always get this kind of myopic vision because of you know, who we hang out with and who we know and what we do for a living. If that's all you see, you might be thinking, you know, we're not that bad off. We don't really need this message of you need to start eating less and you start eating less now, because in general, I mean, for me, it's like, you know, if the abs are a bit blurry, then yeah, I might have to sort of tighten up. But generally, it's not like I'm a hard back walker around weight and habit, right? We think of our friends because we've associated ourselves with fitness for so long. Most of, not all, but most of our friends are either relatively in shape or were in shape in the last couple of years, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we watch a fair amount of, if anything we watch on TV, it's typically sports. I don't know if either one of us watches any other type of TV. But in general, people on TV, with the exception of cartoon characters and sitcom dads, aren't obese, right? So you're being lied to, because what you need to do, and if you're on this call and you're in any way involved in fitness or giving fitness and weight loss advice in any way, and you're making it overly complicated, what you need to do is a tour. And what I want you to do is go to Epcot, then I want you to go to Disney, then a NASCAR race, then an NFL game. And it will give you much better subsections than the, you know, the 10 blogs you visit with people with, you know, who have been lean their whole lives, the 5 television shows you watch with, you know, celebrities that may or may not have had massive amounts of plastic surgery, you know, and the movies you watch with guys, the actors who may or may not be on steroids, right? What you will see if you go to Epcot is the exact same thing I saw, which is an amazing amount of strollers because people have babies, an amazing amount of electric-powered wheelchairs for people who are unbelievably large. Oh. They can't walk. Dude, it was for every, and this is Epcot, so you imagine how many strollers are there. For every 10 strollers, there was one person just on one of these things because they're, for some reason, their health involved them being very large and unable to walk around Epcot.
Mm.
And outside of that, there was a mass amount of people, and we're talking like 12, 13 years of age up, who are just very, very, very large, right? Things that you wouldn't see if you live a life in the gym as a personal trainer, or, you know, it's eye-opening, right? And that's when you realize that the message does have to be very cut, very dry, which means that instead of arguing over what the best type of grain to eat is or whether or not these people should be cutting back on their saturated fats, or in fact, it's mono saturated fat, you know, whatever the newest berry they should be taking, you just to realize these the best help you can give these people right now is to make them realize, look, you have to eat a lot less right now. The fact that Heather and I saw a gentleman in a electric wheelchair who is, while he's there, morbidly obese, eating a turkey leg at Escott, and not a chicken leg, a turkey leg, like six, maybe seven times the size. He looked like Bam Bam from the, or like Fred Flintstone, like it was that big, right? Like a two-hander. You can imagine a little kid's like T-ball bat, it was roughly that size. If it was a one-time thing because you're trying it out because it looks like, oh man, I gotta try that turkey leg, it must be interesting. But I'm telling you, if the message isn't cleaned up and isn't made abundantly clear, it was eye-opening to me is just how far it's gotten.
Just to put a little disclaimer on it, Epcot's probably not exactly the cross-section of the whole North American population.
No, I'm trying to balance out the 350 we see on a daily basis.
Oh, right. I see. I see.
For the 350 that we're constantly seeing, you need to see the flip side to find out where somewhere in the middle is.
Right. Yeah, it's somewhere between the two extremes, like the guy with the turkey leg and then you have Joe Fitness guy online with abs. Somewhere in between is everybody else. Well, I mean, you and I both know the message will never – I mean, this is why people who do Eat, Sleep, Beat get so much pushback from other people. It's because the social meme that's kind of caught on, that the norm, the more of the society is that somehow less is bad, and that's only because it's been lobbied, the message has been lobbied that way. I mean, we get into this political talk, but I mean, it's important because this is part of what forms a national mindset and part of what forms, this sort of general overall accepted negative view of eating less. I mean, like the story I just had of Allie. She went to the doctor and the freaking nurse told her, started lecturing her on losing weight, even though the nurse could have stood to lose 40 or 50 pounds. So it's eventually that you can't let somebody else tell you what your body needs to look like or how to, you can't let the masses and what the mores of the society scare you into like being afraid to lose a bit of weight. It's or to eat less to do it. I don't know how else to say that. It's just the evidence is clear, but the message, the propagandized message will never come out that way. And this is pretty well documented. It's not hard. I mean, if you look through Marion Nussle's work and it's one thing Gary Taub's book actually was decent for. I think he points some of that stuff out. But especially Marion Nussle, if you in Food Politics and some other pieces of research.
Those are two books because they're both worth pimping at this moment. It was Food Politics and What to Eat.
Yes, and What to Eat.
Yeah. They're two very good books, both worth a read. If you're into the obsessive compulsive sort of eating and nutrition clutter info, these books may make you upset because they're kind of pointing at what John and I are saying. It should be a simple message, but it isn't. But if you're actually into some really good information about nutrition and how to deal with population nutrition, that they're definitely worth reading.
Yeah, and it's also when you find out why food labels say what they say and why you never hear the message eat less, it's always eat more. All of those messages have been bitterly fought over by various food industries. It's not like the National Institutes of Health and the research scientists that are on are getting funding from the government. They've told the government ages ago, the FDA ages ago, that we got to tell people to eat less meat. We have to tell people to eat less total food. And then as soon as that, from a purely what's healthy for people standpoint, like how do we deal with the increasing rates of diabetes, the increasing rates of cardiovascular, all of that stuff. This has totally been figured out. And then when that message gets sent to the government, it's like, there's got to be a way to tell people, like get this message into the population. The minute the message to eat less meat shows up, the Cattleman Beef Association fights it bitterly. They're like hell you're telling people to eat less of our product. Tell people to eat less whatever, sugar or dairy or something, but it isn't ours. And then the other industry is like, well, it's not ours. It's not less of ours. And then every single industry pushes back to the point where not only do they put the brakes on the eat less message, they spin it, like Brad said, to the eat more lean cuts of beef, eat more of this and eat more of that. The key word in there is more. The word more always shows up.
You know, I think from from professionals' point of view, John, something that we don't often point out is that this influence of these massive industries might not even come into play. It's the fear of giving the wrong message to that fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percent of population where it is the wrong message. So there is a percentage of people in the world who the message of eat less is definitely the wrong message. I mean, people with eating disorders who are people who are just very thin or in a disease state, right? But instead of just explaining, you know, for the general population, I'm telling you to eat less. The easier answer, but the safer one from your point of view, because you're not putting your neck out there, is instead of saying, you know, don't eat as much, you can sit there and debate whether or not you should be eating more apples or more oranges. Mm-hmm. Instead of being the person saying, don't eat either, right? Because that is dangerous. Very easy way to be labeled as a crackpot, as you and I both know. But it's the moderate way to do it, right? Just kind of argue, well, just exactly my beginning with talking about Obama, Michelle Obama, is instead of what we'll probably start off as a message of eat less, we'll get watered down to make healthy food choices. Because it's a safe one to say. There's no repercussions. There's no damage, right? Like, you're telling people something they already know. Right?
It still promotes consumption.
Exactly. Yep. It's a safe answer. Unfortunately, it's not the correct answer, but it's safe.
Yeah, Canada is not quite as volatile, but in the United States, it's very easy to sue people for just about anything. So, I mean, if Brad and I go on a national speaking campaign and we tell a bunch of people to do something, a way to eat, eventually someone's going to find a way to sue us over some complication that they all claim came from the diet we gave them or something like that. And so what you do is you go with the safest possible recommendation, and then that becomes a national mindset, which is, you know, which we call a meme or a more of the society, just an accepted idea. And then people spend years spinning their wheels, not getting anywhere, thinking they're following all the proper advice, and they never realize the advice is never the truth. It's this convoluted, politically correct, lobbied for, what's the safe way to not get sued message.
Exactly.
Which is nowhere close to what you need to do, and nowhere close to how potent the message should be. It's this beaten up, kicked around, stepped on, watered down, try to please everyone and is useful to nobody message.
Exactly. You know, it was interesting when we talked about sort of the mindset of large populations. It made me think about the three countries where we don't sell Ethiopia. I mean, very rarely, is Germany, France, and Russia. And part of the reason for that is because in any of these places where obviously the message of just don't eat as much or even fast to lose weight is so obvious, it's so ingrained in their culture, that writing a book on it is as ridiculous as, you know, writing a book in the States about how to walk properly, left, right, that kind of thing, right? Like it's so obvious to them, it's not worth even reading because it's part of their culture. The question, I guess, becomes that with these constant messages of moderation, moderation is thought, not in food intake, are we ever really going to be able to fix what's going on in North America? And I don't think we are, because the minute someone comes up, and this is part of a conversation you and I had earlier today, is the minute someone brings up something that may be as radical as eating less, which is so weird to say, you can throw a couple words at them in a very passive-aggressive manner or even an aggressive manner that completely debunks their argument, right? Which is, you call them the quote-unquote expert or quote-unquote guru, and then you use the word pseudoscience. And then it just becomes a big, big yelling, like grade school, I know you are, but what am I, yelling master? It's like, right, they say, you're just some crackpot, ivory tower professor relying on pseudoscience because you're a so-called expert. And you say, wait, no. You're the online blogging, don't have any education in this field, but you're just really interested, so you're the quote-unquote guru using pseudoscience. Right, and it just goes back and forth. So the population is sitting there going like, oh, guys, come help us out here.
Yeah, who do I trust?
Yeah, we just want to know what to do. And then the massive problem is once you because you don't know who to trust, right? As just a typical person on the street hearing three or four different pieces of advice, you don't know who to trust, so you just pick one, right? You know, like, I like that guy. He seemed nice. I'm picking him. Well, now it's a belief system, right? You're not going to give up on that. You're going to change your you're going to start writing a blog about your new way of eating and maybe change your email address and maybe start making your friends refer to you differently because, I mean, you just dive into it. Then what? Right? And now it's impossible to change the mindset. So it's just an eye-opening down here. Realize that, yeah, there's 1% of 1% of 1% of the population are the bodies we see regularly, right? And the realization that this is just not a good cross-section looking at people who make, well, if you think about who we know, with the exception of maybe your friends that are still lean, the rest of the people in this example are people who make a living by being lean, whether it's a celebrity or an athlete or a fitness model, that sort of thing. So they're a horrible, horrible indicator of the actual shape of the nation, so to say. But then if you want to go to the extreme and look at what's going on, you know, in places like Epcot, and just the people there, you realize, wow, there's a whole subsection here who just, you're never going to hear from if you're online or listening to, you know, the Filet podcast, because these people are not online looking at health information. Bar this thing from their mind, right? Just, it's not part of their culture or what they do. So we have these divergent, gosh, they're almost like physical health, what do you call it, John? Like, you can stratify them by economic class. These would be physical health classes.
Yeah, I suppose you could. It's like if you're looking at the the bell curve, they're the opposite extremes of what you would call, like, I don't know, the body composition curve.
But it's not just a composition, because it's their time and money and effort and life spent on that topic as well, right? So
on one end it's completely out of sight, out of mind, couldn't care less, and on the other end it's all consuming to the point where it's obsessive compulsive.
But I think, is it a caste system or a class system? It's a caste, right?
Well,
like, if your economics is low, like low, middle, high.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, class, caste, both, same.
Yeah. So the issue is, I mean, with the economic classes, you can't, it's very difficult to jump from being a low class to middle class, to middle class to high class to upper class in terms of your economic situation, right? Almost impossible because of the people around you in the situation and the cards you've been dealt, so to speak. I'm starting to think that it's equally difficult in sort of the physical culture area, right? Because you're surrounded by people who are in similar mindset, right? You've chosen similar belief systems, and you're constantly getting a message of moderation, which can really be taken any way you want to take it, right? Because that's the beauty of a really nicely worded political message of moderation, is that you can sort of twist it, making sure that it sounds like you're doing something right.
Yeah, and you can, and no matter what the absolute truth or value of that statement is, it'll always be said, with the Michelle Obama example, it'll always be said in an ambiguous way, to the point where you can, no matter where you're starting from, you can somehow make it fit just for you.
Yeah.
So,
and I think
so if you're at 10% body fat, it somehow can fit for you. And if you're at like 70% body fat, it'll somehow fit for you too.
Yeah. The Biggest Loser phenomenon, right?
Yeah.
Such people who are, you know, 320 pounds, 78% body fat, looking at people in the Biggest Loser and be like, wow, I'm not fat. Those people are fat.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's that kind of situation. Yeah, so, I mean, those are sort of my lessons down here. Just sort of, you know, try to take my mind out of the health and fitness game for a bit, but being observant at the same time, I realize, like, wow, you know, there is a large spectrum of body shapes, but I think that we're being lied to in terms of what the actual current state of nations, including Canada and America together in one, is. I think it's a little, it's much different than I think everybody in this industry thinks it is, because we're surrounded by people of like minds, or at least who, you know, you can have completely different views on exercise programs or diet, but you're spending so much time and effort on it, you know, you're still completely separate from the rest of the population. Right? You're not even talking the same language.
Well, and that's part of the confusion of the splitting hairs on what bodybuilders do, and then trying to recommend that out to people who aren't anywhere close to that kind of lifestyle and don't need such a complicated answer. They just need the simplest of simplest answers. And I mean, you and I both don't think the answer ever gets more complicated. We think it's simple in general. If anything, most of what we do is uncomplicate everything for people to the point where they've got it straight in their head, such that they're finally in a mind space to actually accept the real answer. which is unbelievable. We spend most of our time undoing all of the nonsense people have been taught to the point where they can finally see how things actually work.
Yeah, it's we like to use the term decluttering, right? Like it's, we simplify and we focus. And a lot of times it's either things have been far too complicated or far too unfocused. You fix those two things and people see great results because you only have so much, old cliche, you only have so much time in a day. But I think a new way of looking at it is that you also can have so much effort in a day. So it's where you're spending that effort, right? Just diffuses your effort to everywhere and anything, right? Where you're constantly making your food choices, you're still eating more and more and more, but at the same time, you're stressing about it more and more and more because you're probably trying to eat something with more whole grains to lose weight, like that science said, or, you know, at the same time, it's more whole grains. You're also trying to eat more calcium, more low fat, just always more. But now you're putting massive effort into it, which is, you know, no wonder people get discouraged and just give up, right?
Yeah, and then you're going to expect that effort to pay off, and when it doesn't pay off because you're actually not focusing the effort in the right spot, which meaning instead of eating less, you're focusing on eating more of all of these fancy designer foods, then you get super discouraged because you're like, well, I've actually increased my effort with zero result. So now all I've done is spend more time, spent more effort. There's more anxiety, more stress. And no result. Like, I can totally see how people get to the point where, like, weight loss is impossible. Like, I've tried everything. You know, I've tried the...
Oh, 100%.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. And it's because at no point have they actually ever spent any effort on the actual solution. See, at some point, the actual truth has to win out. And at some point, if you ever do experience any weight loss results, you will have had to have inadvertently, even if by complete accident, eaten less. But that's because that's the only way it's going to work. So no matter what you think you're doing, if you actually lose weight, all you've done is eat less, no matter how you design your less. It's just kind of like when you get sick and you lose a bunch of weight because you can't eat. I mean, it's so obvious. Everyone's had that where they lost a bunch of weight because they weren't eating. And you know, maybe if you're sick, it's not by choice. It's just because you can't eat. But, I mean, like we've all experienced it. We all know actually how to lose weight. We've all sort of been through it at some point. Whether or not it was conscious or just by accident. It's just accepting and getting that was the solution. And then, like Brad just said, target your effort, because you only have so much effort in a day. And then you'll be totally pleased with the results. And you'll be like, oh, it's not that bad.
Yeah, okay, so I totally agree with that. So let's highlight this and then bring it together with everything. And the message I think I'm trying to parlay to people this year is be extremely wary of any moderate advice, especially when the moderate advice is being backed or marketed to you by using very small, almost exceptions as examples, right? So the moderate advice of just make healthy food choices while using imagery of 1% of 1% of 1% of the population to tell you this works, right? I mean, I don't know, especially with all the scamming websites out there, how many images of Beyonce I've seen saying, you know, this is the diet she followed. Well, you're using that 1% of 1% of 1% of even Jesus Beyonce. We're talking upper echelon of Hollywood, so 1% of that, right, to promote some moderate view or some moderate advice, right? The same thing with everything in life is a lot of times the moderate advice is a nice advice because it's comfortable, it's friendly, it doesn't require you to change. You know, and you're having massive problems with your marriage. The moderate advice is, you know, we'll just work through it. The moderate advice is maybe, you know, maybe seek counseling. But the advice you may need is just leave him or her. Right? That may be the actual correct advice. It's the one we don't want to hear because it's the toughest to act on and the toughest to accept. But it's not just another example in life where the moderate advice isn't helping you at all. It's just keeping you in the exact same rut. And there's so many other examples where it's moderate advice. Talk shows are great for this. Moderate advice with exceptions to prove that the advice is good. And that's what you have to be extremely wary of.
Yeah, and that's because it's obvious that people are resistant to change, and it's really hard to, because change is stressful and it's hard to do. And it's scary. So people don't want to be told that, man, you got to, like, you're heading east, you got to turn around and head west. Like, you just have to completely change the total direction your life is going. And then if you actually stop and think about it, well, of course it has to be, if you want a drastic result, you have to make a drastic change. You can't just slightly veer off course and expect your body to magically change and your career to shoot right up the ladder and maybe a kind of a relationship that's going nowhere to turn it into the one of your dream. Like, if you don't change something drastic, how do you expect a drastic result?
Exactly. And the interesting thing though is that these drastic changes, they're uncomfortable, but they don't have to be hard, because if they're framed properly, if they're simple and focused, they're actually quite easy to do. The reason that these drastic changes are so difficult is because they're not focused, they're completely diffused, and they haven't been made simple. They've been made so complex, you don't want to do them. It's like doing your taxes at the end of the year. It's not exactly an easy process, right? But if you knew how to do it properly, and if you knew that the benefit coming back to you, well, your taxes are in, you may be getting money back or something, it might be a completely different story. But it's definitely not simple. It's definitely not focused, right? So it's something we don't look forward to, and no one really wants to do. You'd rather pay someone else to do it for you.
Right.
And there's so many examples of that where changes seem really, really hard, are actually that hard because of all the moderate advice you've been given, right? And then all of the alternative advice instead of just a true answer. Whereas if you can get an answer that makes it simple and focused, these drastic changes are actually, they're still drastic, but at least they're not hard. They can actually be incredibly simple to do if you bring your mind to it.
Yeah, right? That's a great point.
A great one, and I'm kind of cherry picking on things I understand here, but the simple and focused way of learning to eat less, the 24-hour fast. Right? You don't have to bite up, and you don't have to fast every single week of your life. Just try it once, and you realize, I put my mind to it. I did it. Simple, focused. I'm able to eat less, right? Like, I don't have to eat every couple hours. I was actually comfortable, right? So trial by fire, there's an example of a simple, focused, drastic change for most people that actually works really well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess the first step to that is straying from the moderate advice.
Exactly. Well, being wary of it, right? If you see overly moderate advice, it's probably that way because someone doesn't want to actually give you the correct or appropriate answer, whether it's just too time-consuming for that person sometimes is the answer, right? They just don't want to deal with you, or they don't know, or this is the easy one. I mean, realistically, you go to any sort of health practitioner and you ask them about eating, it's just going to be, we'll make healthy food choices, cut back on the whatever's popular right now. Yeah. Even though it says eat more greens for weight loss and Cheerios, I think the trend with a lot of alternative health care practitioners is eat less grains. So the message probably says, eat less grains, maybe more dairy or less dairy, whatever trend this week, right? But that's the easy answer to get you in and out of the office as quickly as possible. They're telling you something you're comfortable with, or maybe it's a small change, but don't worry, you're still not eating less, you're just eating more, you're just changing around how you're doing it.
Right.
You just got to be really, really wary of the moderate advice, especially when it's, unique individual cases using to support that advice. And that was the 1% of 1% of 1% content.
Right.
It's actually unbelievable when you go to a rack of magazines, and kind of count up the bodies in it and be like, wow, that was like 30 different people. You just see on a monthly basis constantly, and then on television, same bodies, then in movies, same bodies, and on fitness infomercials and fitness websites, it's more or less same bodies.
The fitness industry is ridiculous because it's the same bodies from the same two or three photo shoots.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. So, and even with the moderate advice, it kind of plays that same way, right? It's coming from the same ones. I think Brad Howard and I actually discussed this as being the parrot phenomenon, right? Of how moderate advice actually comes from the same group of people just being regurgitated around the circle.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so few people stand up, take a stand, and say the opposite, or say what they think is actually true. And now this, I don't know if this will come as a shock to you, but there are 100% for sure people giving you moderate advice who they themselves would never follow it and know better, but know that the advice they're giving you is way more profitable than telling you the actual truth. And that's just 100% happening for sure. And especially in the diet and fitness industry, there's lots of people telling you one thing. And they full bore 100%, don't even believe it, don't practice it themselves.
But they know it's moderate.
Yeah, but they're selling you the thing that sells versus the thing that works.
Mm-hmm. Right. And would it always sell as a way for you to eat more, or at least seem like you're eating now, but getting quote unquote amazing, phenomenal, fantastic results with 6-pack ads and what have you? But yeah. And so I realized to stand out. I mean, if you want to be part of the 1% of 1% of 1%, you can't follow the modern advice. You can't. They don't. That's the thing, right? And it's, even if they're the ones, their images are being used to endorse the moderate advice.
They're definitely not doing it.
Exactly. And so just getting right back to your point, right? Is that even the people pushing the moderate advice on you probably aren't following it.
No.
Right? They're just being used as a spokesperson. And if you think of the actual term of spokesperson, it's exactly that, right? You're chosen. So the moderate advice is developed, created, and then you are chosen to be paid to promote that moderate. It doesn't happen any opposite way around.
Put it this way, I know for sure of models who've signed on to endorse products that right in their contract they say they'll never take the product.
Yeah.
They're like, no, I would never touch that stuff, even though they're endorsing it.
Interesting concept. When you actually are doing TV spots, et cetera, whether it's supplements or health stuff, et cetera, the touchiest point in that commercial sometimes isn't even the claims you're making, it's whether or not the person is consuming your product in the television spot.
Yeah, so, whether or not they're holding it and just holding it up and talking about it, or actually putting it in their mouth and ingesting it.
Right, because it's a different level of
commitment.
Sponsorship.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And that's like fought over and changes how much a contract's worth and everything. And that's like, you know, depending on the image the celebrity needs to uphold, the publicist will be like, nope, that's off the table. Like, they'll say that it's their secret, or they'll say that it's like, you know, their secret weapon in weight loss, but
their life-changing secret weapon, but they're sure they're like putting it in their mouth.
Yeah. And at no point will you ever find them ingesting it.
So how much for me to be in your TV spot? 10,000. Now we want you to actually ingest a product on camera. Oh, 100,000.
Yeah.
How, like, think about how ridiculous that is. It's like, I'll hold it up for you. But I guess you want me to eat it. It's going to cost way more. And yeah, this goes back to, again, the moderate advice and who's giving it out and just being nice and safe, but not actually standing behind something too much. Right? Because you don't want to be the fall guy there. Right? Yeah. So far, what I've learned down here is just watching a lot of moderate advice. I find that their food packaging, the U.S. food packaging, is different than ours. And we knew that, but, you know, it's not until you walk through a Publix or in a Target down here that you're really aware of how different it is. We tend to think it's very similar because, you know, there's a lot of creep into Canada in terms of how things are visualized and displayed, but it is definitely different. And it is much more in-your-face marketing, but at the same time, it's in-your-face marketing with moderate messaging, which is actually just a very interesting, ironic thing going on.
Yeah, it's a moderate message, but in a really big font.
Exactly. Yeah. Bold font saying,
Eat more whole oats, grains, or something.
That's actually interesting you said that, because when we went through the store, you could just basically boil down every single health claim in big bold letters on every package to just saying, eat more of this.
Yeah.
So, they're not really health claims. They're just eat more claims.
Yeah.
So, very interesting. So this was kind of an impromptu call. I didn't really have anything other than just those ideas to share with you and everybody listening. But it was really, really made me aware when I saw a subset of the population that I don't normally see on a daily basis in my daily life. And made me aware of perhaps just doing nothing but going to work with the same 30, 40, 200 people that you see every day, then watching the same television shows and reading the same 10, 15 fitness blogs. You can get a really skewed view of what the shape of the nation actually are. And if you're thinking that everybody is in relatively okay shape, you know, then the moderate advice kind of makes sense. It's not until you see it failing miserably that you realize, oh, okay, the moderate advice isn't going to work. The boiled down decision by committee is simply not going to fix the problem. It may have, if it was done properly way back in the day, slowed or even prevented the problem, but it's not going to fix it.
Right.
Yep. So be wary of moderate viewpoints, moderate advice, especially when exceptions are the ones being used to prove it. This doesn't have to do with just your food, basically everything in life. And, you know, in all seriousness, if you get a chance, and if it's something you haven't done with a sort of a health nutrition mindset, go to Epcot. Go to Disney. Especially Epcot, because there's food around the world, which is actually really good food. So, you know, take some time out, eat some good food, but also just sort of take a look at what's going on.
All right.
That's all about. Yeah.
Well, I think that's
so
good.
I'm going to leave you at that. I know last time we talked about me polishing off a quarter bag of Chippets, and right now my brother-in-law has shown up with leftovers from the Cheesecake Factory, so I think I'm done this phone call.
All right, you got to deal with that. All right, then. Okay, beauty.
All right, so let's close this off and get out of here.
All right, so for Brad Peelan, I'm John Barbin, and that was your Phi Life podcast.